Hello, Oli.
Hey. Hey, how's it going?
Good to have you back on, man. We're also joined by Mark Howard from Unveiling the Truth. I believe you were on his show. Well, I know for a fact you were on his show before because I watched the video.
I was indeed. How are you doing, Mark?
Is he
I'm
there?
doing great. How are you doing, Ollie?
Yeah, great, great. Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on a couple of things from the start off. From the listeners, they've sent these in actually. They're wanting to know what your take is on the Breitbart and the Michael Hastings deaths.
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you, Ole. It's your hour.
Okay. It's okay, thank you. I didn't hear the first name. I heard Michael Hastings and
Michael
then.
Hastings and Breitbart, the two journalists who would died in mysterious ways. Well, Breitbart was more conventional. He had a heart attack, but he was a young guy. But Michael Hastings, the Rolling Stone journalist,
Yeah.
His car
I'm very
exploded.
aware of Michael Hastings' death. The other gentleman, I'm not so I don't know his name, but Michael Hastings, for sure, he was as far as I can see it, it was a clear assassination after that he had declared war more or less on the Obama administration about this whole how to. The way that the media nowadays have been absolutely suppressed and silenced, and he was one of the very few and brave that stood up and took a stand, and it cost him dearly.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to look at the incident, and in general, cars don't explode. That only happens in movies, and what we saw in this case was a double impact that hit a tree and then suddenly exploded. And it seems on the video that there's like two explosions. Then it came out afterwards. People were saying, "Can cars be hacked?" And the manufacturers were coming out and saying, "Yeah, they can be hacked." So is it your take that the car was hacked and that he just was made to crash into the tree and then there was some sort of explosive device on there?
My take of it is that it was hacked as well. And I mean, DARPA has technology that can easily do these things. The explosions themselves, if it was a bomb that was placed, it seems like the bomb was placed underneath the car. But there were, like you say, there were several explosions. So, but if that was the gas tank that exploded or what the secondary explosion was, I'm not sure. But for sure, it was a massive explosion that took place then. That had nothing to do. I think once the car actually rammed into the tree, it was like going very slowly. It was just rolling forward, and the tree was very weak as well, but more or less unhurt.
Have you looked into this, Mark?
Yeah, definitely. It could even be that it was a remote control explosion.
Yeah, that is exactly what I'm saying as well. Remote control for sure.
Yeah, the other
Some,
yeah, the go
but
on.
so, now nowadays the technology nowadays allows the one that like when they blew up Orlando Letier in Washington some years ago, there were a car following and they had the detonator in the remote control in the car that followed them. But nowadays with the technology that now exists is you can be in LA and get a car to explode in New York and so on while having them covered by a satellite so you can follow the whole procedure there. And I think that is what happened. I don't, as far as I know, the car was totally on its own when this happened.
Yeah, and
So
it also just happened to be Michael Hastings that this happened to, right? So it could have been anybody else's car. I mean, but it just happened to be this guy's car, and that's questionable big time. I mean, I think people are aware of what's going on in that aspect for sure.
Well, he had he'd pissed off the highest of the highest. He'd done a major article, well, a number of articles on the general in Afghanistan and the corruption around that. So, I mean, all the journalists, their point of view, especially RT journalists, their point of view is he pissed off the wrong people. And what could they do? They could hire a contractor to get him killed.
Yeah,
Because
that's the way the mafia used to do it. They'd just go under the car, plant a magnetic or a explosive device. But now I'm sure they have remote control where they could do it from a computer miles and miles away. So,
In the case of Breitbart, which you haven't heard of, I'm sure you've heard of the Breitbart death, Mark.
I'm not fully aware of the information in regards to it, but I did hear that name brought up about journalism.
Breitbart.com's the major... major outfit when it comes to alternative news, actually, and he was just about to release some footage of Obama when he was at college, and some pretty damning stuff. A little bit of it was released after his death, but not the stuff he was talking about, because he said it was gonna take him down. He was gonna be impeached because it was proven he was basically like a communist, or he had communist links anyway. But he died of a heart attack, and we know the CIA have these dart guns where they can basically just shoot nicotine into you, because that's the easiest way to assassinate somebody, is just to put nicotine in them, if they're a smoker, which he was, and then you have a heart attack and there's no way to trace it.
Another way that they could do it now as well is invisible energy rays.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you're in this world of conspiracies, it's very easy to get paranoid. Yet again, once you start seeing the pattern, I mean, the pattern is so clear that when somebody is about to release some kind of important truth, or if there's about to give testimony about something really important, they have a very bad habit of dying very young.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I don't want to talk about tonight is, in every false flag or in every incident, there always has to be a hero in the situation. There's Jessica Lynch, there's a Pat Tillman story, but throughout there's always got to be a hero story. Flight 93, there's the American football players that overpowered the terrorists. It's just, you always have to play this hero story into everything. Even the Boston bombing, they had that, who was the guy in the cowboy hat, he was the hero when he wasn't really a hero. That there's a video just came out about that, actually. It shows you the video footage of what he actually did, and what he said after. He said he picked up the guy with no legs, with one arm, and there was actually three people picked him up. But he became the hero of the situation when he was far from a hero.
The guy you describe is really interesting, because it's not the first time he went on national news. Mm-hmm. A few years before the Boston bombing, he was filmed, or in the news he was presented as the father of a soldier that had been killed in Vietnam, I think it was. It was one of these wars. I'm not sure if it was Vietnam or one of the later wars. I think it must have been one of the later. But anyway, they said that... he was so stricken with sorrow after receiving the message of his son having died in combat. It was the Iraq War. Sorry about the confusion. And so what he actually did was he went into the TV crew's van and turned himself on fire.
That's what it did.
And then he suddenly pops up some years later, no scars, no nothing. And then he's this, one of the center guys in this whole big black op.
Yeah, he's called Carlos Arredondo. He set fire to that vehicle, and then he changed the story after that. It was his vehicle, and then there was various other stories.
He set fire to himself.
He said he did it in his own vehicle after. There's interviews on this video, actually. You can check it out on Betty McGee's YouTube channel. It's called Carlos Arredondo, Boston Hero or New World Order Fraud. It's a very good insight into this guy.
I mean, once you start looking into like the Boston bombing and many others of these, and you start really checking up the different characters that are involved, it's very smelly. It doesn't take you long to suss them out, and they keep appearing just in different shape. You know, they have different roles and different of these so-called events. So they keep popping up again and again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The point of the video and what they're trying to say is that because of the incident where he set fire to the vehicle, he didn't actually get charged. There was no charges against him. And they're trying to say, was it some sort of deal for him to be involved in a future incident where he was kind of like an actor in the situation?
I think he was an actor in both of them. He was there the first with his the van thing when his son was said to have been killed in action. I think that was sort of like a psyop to regain confidence in the troops in Iraq and how to get more mm-hmm. support from the public to keep supporting the war. I think that was what was going on the first one, and then Boston Marathon speaks for itself.
It was a bizarre photo shoot he did for Time magazine on the death of his son. There was actually photographs taken from the coffin. The camera must have been literally in the coffin to take these shots. And it was just creepy the way they did it to be legit. It was really creepy at the bottom end of it. If it was legit, then it's really creepy to be doing that, to be putting a camera in the coffin and then taking a picture of the grieving parents.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of events that have happened that were just purely Hollywoodized. Like Jessica Lynch is a perfect example there.
Mm-hmm. And the Pat Tillman story, he was killed, well, if you believe the story, he was killed in friendly fire legitimately, but if you look into it more, it seemed that, he was against the war. He was writing things about the war. He was actually an American footballer, huge hero at home, and he chose to ditch all that and become a soldier. But when he got there, he realized, shit. This is what we're fighting for. So he started writing home about it, saying it was a fraud, and then it seems like he was killed to shut him up.
May I jump in here, gentlemen?
Yeah.
Okay, hi there, hola.
Hi, Tommy.
How are you this evening?
I'm doing great, thank you. And you?
Did you sort out the apartment thing?
Maybe we can take this off air.
Yeah, right. You just, yes or no?
No.
Right, I understand. Okay, I just wanted to put all of the comments and analysis into perspective, because we can deduct certain things, and we can also use the a prioristic method, and we end up with a grand conspiracy of various, and I don't like the word conspiracy because it is generally proven facts. What do we deduce from this, if we are going to deduce anything? And that is this, that globally there is as Mark likes to say in Canada, connecting the dots and creating the pattern. And what are we looking at? We are looking at a world that is so full of clandestine events, and yet the events themselves have only significance when put into the broader perspective of what is the agenda of the people who are involved at the very apex of the pyramid. And the very apex of the pyramid is not just individual assassinations, even if you go to the level of the assassination of JFK or Bob and Martin Luther King. It is what they are trying to achieve through these eliminations of important people or even lower level whistleblowers. And we see that the pattern leads us to the idea of a dominant class that are going to, according to their ideology, create a super class over humanity. So humanity, the voices that are exposing this general plan, as we saw at the Bilderbergs, Tom and I, as you know, Ola, we were there, and we were demonstrating not against one particular area. We were just demonstrating against the whole idea of secret societies taking over the direction of the future of the planet and the future of the whole of us as a population. And I'm glad, Ola, that you mentioned Mike Hastings, because I have on my computer a little sign which says, "People die. This is not an academic debate."
Yeah, and Ola, you in particular, you've pinpointed a lot of these events to Operation 40.
Yeah, a lot of these have been carried out with members from Operation 40, at least up until the early 1990s, but still up in the 2000s and so on. And they're still active, even though they're old guys. But this is the Operation 40 is called the grandmother of all operations, and that they were sort of they set the template there that has been used the mold for future generations of assassins and also different of these terror acts. So I think it's a very good idea to study Operation 40 in great details, because that will learn us a lot also about what is going on at the moment.
So how many people do you think are involved in Operation 40?
In killing?
Yeah. How many people are at the head of Operation 40?
The sound broke up there, but if you're asking about how many people they've been part of taking out, we're talking in the thousands.
I'm asking how many people are at the head of the snake, how many people are at the head of Operation 40, how many of these old guys or how many people are involved, or is it linked into all of the secret societies, all the Bilderberg, the Skull and Bones?
No, as far as I know, I know from in the early 1960s, it was a group between, in the beginning, around 40, between 40 and 85. But then that grew. But over the years, they've changed the names and they changed the constellation of the group and so on. But I wouldn't really know today. But I don't think the core group is there. The old guys are still there, being part of training new, and also, I mean, like in the year 2000, one of them was trying to make a hit on Fidel Castro in Panama. And I mean, so they're still there. They were part of the John Lennon. They were part of the attack on Bob Marley. They were part of the whole Iran-Contra scandal. You name it, going back to JFK, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy. Also, some members were part of the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, and they were part of killing Robert Smith in South Africa. They were part of the overthrow of Salvador Allende in Chile, 73. They were part of killing, or they killed Pablo Neruda, the Nobel Prize winner, poet.
Sorry to interrupt you, and I'm not interrupting for no reason. We had a guy in England who was a member of the Labour Party who came out against the fraud that was the weapons of mass destruction scenario led by Tony Blair in England, yeah? And I can't pick up his name just at the moment. Tom, help me.
I know who you're talking about, and I can't think of the name.
No, you can't either. He was Labour minister.
With the beard. He has a beard.
No. Going back, this guy was assassinated, as far as I can understand it.
He died around the same time as
that's right, yeah, Robin
David,
Cook.
David, yeah, Robin Cook. Robin Cook, same time, yeah, as the David Kelly incident.
Yeah, exactly.
There wasn't far between it. Have you looked into that? You must have looked into that one, the death of David Kelly, Orla.
I have, but not deep enough to talk about it. But for sure, I've been speaking to people who knew him very well, and And I mean, the whole thing, once again, there's a massive question mark. I would say more or less without a doubt that he was assassinated the way and well, Robin Cook as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But my point again, I've got to put the broader brush on this, and that is why these types of individuals, whether it be the Robin Cooks or the Mike Hastings, etc., what is it that these groupings at the top of the apex of the pyramid fear so much from just generally what you would consider to be, I mean, Mike Hastings had Rolling Stones, of course, as a media outlet, and he, but he knew something that, and the reason, Tom, I'm bringing this up, and I'm really sorry that I keep doing these sort of things, but it's to me, it is connected with the banker suicides that we are seeing today. We've got a big question mark why 25 leading bankers in the last month and a half or 2 months, I think it started in January, well, it's a month and a half, yeah, have seemingly taken it into their heads to jump out of high skyscraper buildings. Now, what is going on seems to be another wiping out of the people who are opposing the New World Order's agenda. Because if you were a banker, there's no reason for you to jump out of a window. You could take your money and run, and you can go to Switzerland or whatever. So when you've got 25 top bankers, there is either because they know something is terrible is going to happen on in the agenda of creating this horrific New World Order that has been promoted at Bilderberg last year. Either that or, well, I don't know. Give me another explanation.
Have you seen anything about these deaths, Orlea?
Yeah, of course. And my interpretation, I mean, we can only guess from the outside, but
exactly.
My interpretation is that I really think that the global elite are getting shit scared because mm-hmm. there's such an awakening going on, and so many people are waking up, seeing them. Suddenly the spotlight is on them instead of them being able to move around without being disturbed in the dark. And now suddenly everybody is, or more and more, are getting aware of it. And I think because of that, now they see that whistleblowers start popping up as well. So they're trying to shut people down, to shut them up and save their own skin. But it's just that there's so many involved and so many people in key positions who know too much mm-hmm. that they have, I think they have almost like cleanup actions. That is what they're doing now with the bankers, I think. It's just taking them one by one. But in the long run, it won't work. It's just falling apart around them.
Yeah,
at least that's my, because I feel very positive about the future, and I think this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. But if you see it from another point of view, then it can be from a different angle that these are being wiped out for the agenda to move forward, to get away of any obstacle in their way. But I believe in option one there.
Yeah, maybe it is like Tommy says. Maybe these guys are guys who are going to bail out. They're going to bail out of the situation and then live their lives. But that, like you say, they know too much. I mean, this one takes the biscuit. And like you said in the past, they're getting very sloppy with these sort of things.
Sloppy indeed.
CEO commits suicide by shooting himself with a nail gun. Not once, 8 times.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, listen to it yourself. It's like my daughter could just start laughing and think you were telling a joke because it's just so bad.
Yeah,
you know, it's like come on.
They have a tactic. Whenever something like this happens, the media gets a hold of it and they pump out this story, and that's what kind of shapes everyone's opinion. But I think what's going to happen, I agree totally with what Ole said, and that is I have faith for the future. I think people are really waking up, and you know, things are going to change big time. And I think the public and individuals are going to start reporting and be their own media, and the go-to media people for news stories, people from the ground, from local levels, and that's where people are going to start going for information, because it'll be the only credible information once people are aware of the truth. So
yeah, they can't afford to be so sloppy, because the media just pumps out the official story. Like this one.
Didn't Anderson Cooper's show just get pulled?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because people know he's CIA, and they know that he's a scumbag. So there they took him off the air, that he's got bad public view, I think.
Oh, my.
But I also think you said about this nail gun type of thing. That is also a way of warning other people to back off, you know, stay in line, keep your head down, shut up. So they do it in a brutal way. Instead of just a pill in the coffee, they do it like with a nail gun or something awful like that. It's just like the mob has always done over the years. You know, they shoot you around the mouth with eight bullets around the mouth or something like that to just make a point. Whistleblower, shut up. You know.
Yeah, I think Ole has done some really profound research too in connecting organized crime with the government, and kudos to you for doing that, Ole. You've done some really amazing work in exposing that.
Thank you, Mark. No, the mob has been used internally in the States since the 50s for doing inside jobs.
Especially during the J. Edgar Hoover period, yeah.
No, but they carried on. I mean, they used them to this day. It's very hard to tell where it begins and where it starts, you know, what is mob and what is CIA.
Can I jump in again?
Mm-hmm. Please do.
Thank you. Let's go back to the reason for the prohibition in the United States. Had nothing to do with alcohol, but it had everything to do with controlling the supply of something that people desired, and that was basically to have a drink. Now, the alcohol goes back in the human culture, basically to the most primitive tribes that you can imagine, were even turning goat's milk into alcoholic beverages. And it continued throughout human history. Certain cultures indulged more and others slightly less, but most people always found it necessary to have some form of let's call it relaxation. Now, when prohibition was put in place in the United States, immediately by criminalizing something that people generally took as granted, you created the black market. And the Kennedy family, and I'm sorry to say this because John Kennedy actually became a really great president in many respects, at least on the surface of what we saw in his speeches. And yet the Kennedy family, along with the Bronfman family, who created Seagram's whiskey in Canada, and also fed people like Prescott Bush, who was also a supporter of the fascist Nazi party. When you are looking at the mob per se, the mob, the Italian mafia, is just a part of British Empire connections. Now, the reason I say this is, if you look at Joe Kennedy, he spent $50,000. To buy his ambassador to Britain in order to get John and Joe, who was killed in the Second World War, but also Bobby and Ted. They all were educated at English institutions. But the more important thing is, what did Prohibition do? It created the first collectivized mafia. In other words, what you did is you consolidated small little Italian groups with British sponsored groups. The Episcopalians, although they always kept washing their hands of their involvement. But Prohibition did only one thing, the same way as the drug war has only done one thing, and that is to create a black market and create crime.
Well, and if you look back, even some of these powerful people that are connected like that were also involved even before Prohibition with the opium trade. So they've been doing this for centuries. They've been in control of the drugs and alcohol, and Prohibition was a way for the mob to gain more power and prominence, especially within the government, especially after they legalized it again and organized it all. There was definitely mob figures that gained from that, and it continued throughout. And you got the Iran-Contra scandal. You've got all this stuff happening in modern times or more recent times. You've also got them dominating the opium fields in Afghanistan right now. And then you have an increase in methadone clinics and all that stuff. So they're definitely still a huge organized crime presence, I think, in the government and in control of this. And I also wanted to mention, like a friend of mine, I've been speaking to them. They had a position in the government, like a federal position even, where they're working with people that were junkies and people that were addicted to drugs and got involved with prostitution. And when they actually had programs that were helping these people and the statistic raised to get people off the streets and getting better lives and taking care of themselves, she was pulled into an office by her superior, and her superior told her directly, look, like, you're going to be taking away some people's jobs by doing what you're doing, so you better chill out or you're going to be filing papers for the rest of your life. And she had to quit shortly after that because she realized that they do want people to be buying drugs. They do want people to be, you know, involved in all this. So,
thank you, Mark. But the thing I was trying to say to Ola is that if you look and connect the dots, as you have done in regard to the groupings that have been involved in horrible, terrible assassinations and torture of you know, their enemy. But when you look a little bit higher than the simple fact that these people have been assassinated or murdered, you will also see a pattern of the reason why it is being done. It's not being done arbitrarily. It's not an accident that Olof Palme was killed. It was, in my opinion, and by the way, Ola, if you don't agree with me, jag kan godt tale dansk med dig, og det kan du ikke. Nej, det gør vi ikke nu. Okay, look, Ola, my thing about that is about the Olof Palme assassination, although connected with local issues, if you like, Scandinavian issues a little bit, was much, much deeper in respect that Olof Palme made a declaration in the Christian Science Monitor in 7 days before he was assassinated, where he said he was going to support the SDI project, the Strategic Defense Initiative project. It's on page 7 of the Svenska Dagbladet, and the front page was his assassination.
I totally agree with you when it comes to knowing that these things are not just random acts of violence. They're very connected, and there's a very clear pattern between them. There are very clear dots that are connected. And in my research, I always come back to the same power elite that is behind more or less everything that has been going on for many, many years in the Western world, at least. And when it comes to the Olof Palme assassination, I can only say that I thought it was quite an easy case, and I spent 30 years looking into it. I was on Red Eyes Creations, and we did 8 hours just on the step-by-step-by-step, because it's such a complex assassination. So and the power behind it is very big as well. I mean, it's not a Swedish assassination. It's a, it's on a massive international scale. So,
You know what? Here is the most important part. It's, again, I'm painting a broad brush on what are individual cases. And what I am trying to look at is what the apex of the pyramid are trying to achieve. What is their goal? Why are these, why am I, for example, in danger, or you, or Mark, or Tom, or Alex, or LaRouche, or Webster? Because we are unified, as far as I understand, in the idea of the progression of humanity in order to help to create an optimistic future for our young future generation, I hope even our children, so that they can see a way in which to solve the problems that the world is facing today. Because we have, for example, the Californian drought, which can be solved very easily by the NWAPA program. We have this Middle East crisis, which can be easily solved by unifying the Arabs and the Israelis around the idea of a God, if you like a God. I don't do God. I have my own personal God. But the important thing is that the drive of good people is not to look at race or sexuality or something like that, but to see us all uplifting ourselves towards a goal that is the development of humanity as a whole. And it seems to me, when you look at these assassinations, you will always find it is people who have arrived at a concept of a unified goal for humanity. And I think of John Kennedy in this respect. I think of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, who changed from being a radical Muslim and became a universal Muslim, understanding that we're all in the same boat, going in the same direction. And when you do assassinations, it's like, from my perspective, it's like shooting holes in the ship of humanity, so that we start to sink. And the people at the top of this type of activity have another goal, which has got nothing to do with the betterment of humanity, but only the grabbing of control for their own egocentric madness.
Thank you. Well put. I think that is exactly the case. That is why many of these people who have been taken out have been absolutely beautiful people in my world, absolutely incredible human beings who have had the guts and the stamina to be able to stand up against this, but have paid a high price.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not sure I've got the stamina, but I've got the beer.
Yeah. No,
any comments from you, Tom?
No, I think you've been hitting the nail on the head all night, actually. Everybody, actually.
It's a challenging time. I mean, with the new world order, in my opinion, humble opinion, is the Fourth Reich, and everyone who stands against it is looked. If you're not with them, you're against them, and if you are too much, too loud for their appreciation, they will deal with you in different ways.
Yeah,
and if you stand up for the truth, which is against them, and exposure of them, they will hit you.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't finish off was when we were talking about these bankers who were murdered. In our opinion, I would say they can afford to be sloppy because the mainstream media just pumps out this story, like this one about this CEO who's apparently committed suicide, shooting himself 8 times with a nail gun, and it's just it's like it's legit. The whole story is, this is just a legit story. Oh yeah, he just he shot himself a few times in the body, and then he started shooting himself in the head. Just like it's a total legit story, just like the Dr. David Kelly story, which we were talking about earlier, where he hung himself, he took pills. There was like, he committed suicide basically three times. There was like three methods of suicide that he carried out, and then the main factor of that one is
it's not even funny. Too.
The Mason report. There was a police officer actually started the Mason report before David Kelly actually stepped foot out for his final walk, and that the report was on Dr. David Kelly's death. And he started typing it before he even stepped foot out of the house on his final walk.
I tell you, there was there was a very, very brave policeman in Sweden. His name was Gösta Trysberg, and he was the officer in charge of a of a group in the Norrmalm police station that was very central in the assassination of Olof Palme. And there were some extreme right-wing gatherings there. Quite a few of the police officers in that police station were extreme Nazis. And this man, Gösta Trysberg, who was the officer higher in rank, he was very, very worried about that and tried to stop this thing, because he thought that was very dangerous, because this is the police station that covers the Royal Castle, is the where the government buildings are and the central very important buildings in Stockholm and so on. So, but anyway, he ended up dead. One day he went out to pick up the mail, and he didn't return, so his wife went out looking for him, and she found him. He had stabbed himself, or he was stabbed 15 times and hit in the face with something very hard, and found on his back with the knife that he was stabbed with underneath him. Anyway, this thing was signed off as from one of pathologist in Sweden. His name is Johan Reis, and he's extremely high up in the power pyramid when it comes to these things. He's also involved in many of the very controversial cases in Sweden. But that was signed off as a suicide. I went home to this policeman's family, and his wife, she was still to the day when I met her totally convinced that he had committed suicide. But I mean, how do you do that? How try to stab yourself 15 times? I dare you. You won't even make it to four until you're dead, you know, if you really go for it. But to this very day, it's still a suicide. It's ruled as a suicide.
Yeah, my friend actually filed a Freedom of Information request on the death of Dr. David Kelly. He wanted the Mason report, and he showed me the letter he got back, and it was a total whitewash. So, oh, we don't know which police officer wrote that. We don't know which police department wrote that. Oh, it's going to cost too much money to get hold of that information, even though there was a member of Parliament actually backing up his Freedom of Information request and said he would pay any expenses for it to come out. And it was public knowledge which police officer wrote it and which department was involved.
It's just when you're in this area, I mean, you to try and get the truth out from the official authorities, you will just be like banging your head against the wall. They are there to stop the truth from coming out. So you might as well try another way, you know, get around them, go underneath, above, or whatever, dig your way in to find the real truth, because they will just bombard you or give you back documents that says absolutely nothing, and just will neglect everything or reject everything that you ask for. Or so. I'm sorry, my English is not so good tonight. But
come on, Ole, you're doing great. Du kan godt prate på svensk lige nu, yeah?
Oh, okay, exactly.
Come on, we'll do it. Look, the thing that is really crucial, I think, to what we have been discussing, Tom, with our guests, and I would suggest with all our listeners, is with the deluge of information that Ola and Mark and hopefully Ben will be joining us very soon, is that the conclusion that we should all draw is that the information is available. And what do we do with it? How do we unite to create a very interesting outlet for these insights, so that a lot of people also help and join our efforts? You know, I mean, I know that Ola, you've had a lot of problems publishing the book. I know that Mark has, you know, not received the gracious welcome to the international world of publicizing that should be there. And I know that Tom sometimes gets a little bit depressed up there in Durham, not only because it's cold and because the Romans didn't overtake it, but but the thing, and me, poor old cripple down in Bexhill. Look, the thing that is so important is that we manage to somehow unify the knowledge so that everybody not only has the desire to listen and but also to get involved. Any ideas out there how we can help that, apart from doing what we're doing?
Yeah, like I was going to say, with everything you said there, I started a group in 2011 called the World Public Union. And what that group is, the intention of that group anyways, is to create an opposing force to the New World Order. And that is that is started on a local level. So there's different chapters and different communities, and people get involved to discuss these issues and to figure out solutions for these problems. And a lot of times these issues are like fluoridation of the water, manipulation of evidence, destroying of documents, corruption, political corruption, financial, corporate corruption, inequality, divisions. There's a whole bunch of issues, and in fact, all issues could be addressed through this platform. And it was the idea of this came about to actually provide a solution for the problems, because if there's enough people involved and awakened to the realities and the truth of this stuff, then the truth will come out. And in instances where there has been cover-ups, we'll be able to identify who the person was that covered it up and hold them accountable. And once people are starting to be held accountable for their actions in the government, in corporations, banksters, it does in all different avenues, once people are held accountable for their actions and the public sees that penalties were a result of doing that, and whether it be criminal charges put upon them and they become imprisoned, or they lose their job. What you're seeing is when all these crimes happen and there is cover-ups and all this stuff, these people are promoted. They become presidents of organizations, and they're rewarded for their role in these cover-ups and these crimes. And that's what's happening. So the World Public Union was a way to identify the problems and work together with other people in your own local community. Whether you start one up if there isn't one, or whether you meet the other people in your community that are awakened to this stuff, but it's a way to work together in the community and actually provide solutions to the problem.
Okay, Ola, in regard to your extensive and deep analysis of the various groups and individuals sometimes that you've identified as being involved in, well, terrible, terrible things. How do you envision, apart from being able to talk with us, how do you envision a way in which you can use this vast knowledge that you have and to get it out? Because as you've said, your book has been blocked a little bit.
I tell you, I wish I had an answer for your question. I've been looking for that answer for years and years. Yeah. And I actually signed a book deal in late December with an American publisher. and everything went really well. And then when we were just about to publish it, they canceled the deal.
Do you know why, Ola?
They say technical difficulties, and I tell you, I don't want to point any fingers at all. I was really grateful for it was a small company that they had the guts to try it, and I don't know if they got cold feet or whatever. It doesn't matter. What happened, and but I'm still in the position where I'm looking for a publisher. Mm-hmm. I'm still looking to make a high quality documentary about mm-hmm. Operation 40 and so on. Mark and I have been talking about that. But
yeah, are you familiar with Trinde Publishing, Ole?
Yeah, I tried to contact them. They never got back to me. David Guyot recommended me, but mm-hmm. I'm going to try again.
That would be my recommendation for you. I think if you actually reach through to them, they might help you out.
Sounds wonderful.
Well, Mark, you can help him to get in contact with them.
Yeah, I don't know who to contact, but I know that they've published like Dr. Mary's Monkey, Me and Lee.
Yeah,
I speak to Judith Baker, and she's and I think the information that you have, Ole, is very, very profound. Like, it's so intense. Mm-hmm. You need to have that book published. People need to know that information. And
I tell you, Mark, if you or listeners or anyone would like to help me, please email me just like a testimonial that I can use for them to say this. Do you know, like Mark Hobbit says this, do you know, it's important. He says this is important. So I can sort of get to knock on the door, a more powerful knock on the door.
I
just wanted to mention one thing. You say how to make people wake up and so on. Mm-hmm. One thing that I've noticed over all of these years is like when I've been digging into these very dark things, people cannot handle it. People around me cannot handle it. They get, oh my God, can this guy please shut up, because it's just too depressing. I don't.
Yeah.
So I after some years, I just came to a point where I went very silent. I didn't talk about this at all until about a year ago when this whole thing took off.
Can I throw something in there?
You can, if I can please finish first.
Go on, Ola.
No, the thing is what made the difference for me was that when I changed the approach and I came from a point of optimism, of light, of, you know, like we are going to get us out of this. This is just a challenge, and we are the strongest of the strong are going to get out of this on the other side, celebrating. Do you know, when you come from this instead of doomsday and all this dark, then it's like people suddenly start listening, and they grab onto it, and they get hope, and then it starts moving, and they start getting interested in finding out themselves and so on. So I think this is one way of going as well, because if you just keep pointing at problems having any solutions, then it's a downward spiral.
And unfortunately, a lot of media outlets just focus on the problem. They don't offer solutions.
Yeah, well, this is the beauty of the whole thing of why all of the geniuses of the world who have had dark thoughts, like Beethoven, Mozart, etc. We can go through Einstein. We can, it doesn't matter. You know, just look through history, Shakespeare and so on. They're all drunks. Why are they all drunks? Because the only way to get through this sort of thing, and yes, you are right, Ola, when you say that it is to take the lighter touch and to realize that, yes, there are solutions. When we are dealing with the crisis in the economic situation at the moment, we know that we can reverse the banking laws back to in the United States. I'm not sure how effective that would be in Canada or in England. But we can get rid of these parasitical institutions which have been sucking the lifeblood out of humanity for so long. We can do it. We've had revolutions which have been, you know, even not perfectly successful, but at least significantly successful. The British population are not unaware the ability to get out of the hole that we're in. But it is difficult, and you do need a sense of humor while we're going through this struggle. And to get people, as you said, Ola, the worst thing is because you are telling them something which they find, I suppose, shocking or very, very difficult to comprehend. When you say to... Sorry, Ola, what did you say?
It wasn't me.
It was just me. Tom. We're at the end of our time, actually, Tommy, so we'll have to wrap it up with Ollie and Mark. If you could give out your links for your website and your latest book, even though it's not published yet, I believe. So, give out the links for your previous books.
Okay, it's the website is lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com. I've got several books, but the book we're talking about is called Coup d'etat in slow motion. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's mainly about the assassination of Olof Palme, but showing all the links to other major, major events all over the globe. And I just want to say, I think it goes for, at least for me and Mark and other people, any donations are greatly, greatly appreciated, because it is very hard to do this type of research with very little income and a family to feed. So I just say, if anybody wants to help and they don't feel that they want to be up here in the front line taking a stand, please support the rest of us by donations and so on. Or I also got a monthly newsletter so that people can subscribe to. I just also want to salute you, Mark, for this, the world... What was the name? The World Union Organization?
Ah, yes, the World Public Union.
Sorry about that, World Public Union. To take initiatives like that is really important. I think that is super duper. And go for it.
Yeah, people can check that website out at www.worldpublicunion.org. And it's very hard for me to keep that website updated, because there's literally like almost 200 unions around the world right now, and it's growing, and I've got a whole mailbox full of requests from people all around the world wanting to start local unions, but it's so much overwhelming work for me to do alone. Mm-hmm. And that's not the idea of the World Public Union. It's not my group. I'm not the leader. The idea of the World Public Union is it's a group of leaderless leaders. We're all our own leaders. We all make our own decisions, and we take responsibility for our own actions, and we contribute to it whatever we can, and we work together, right? That's the whole idea. And if there's anybody out there that wants to help out with that group to make a difference in their community, send me an email. And if there's people out there that know website, how to operate websites in HTML, that want to help with the website and contribute content to it, that would also be really helpful, because I don't have a lot of time to keep it up to date, which is why it is kind of not always updated. But the potential's there. I think if people took it into their own hands and contributed to themselves, I think it would really grow into something needed in the world for sure.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much, Ollie, and thank you very much, Mark. It's been a pleasure tonight.
My absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Thank you very much. See you next time.
See you too. Ciao. Bye-bye, Tommy.
Adios, amigos.
Adios.
Adios.
so big, another warning. I should have been in by 10. Now I won't get out till Sunday. I'll have to say I stayed with friends. Oh, but it's a habit worth forming if it means to justify the end. Dancing in the moonlight.